Support for WPR comes from Stafford Rosenbaum, a Wisconsin-based law firm celebrating 145 years of commitment to practical legal solutions in areas such as family law and estate planning. StaffordLaw.com.
Support for WPR comes from Isthmus Partners, an independent asset management firm offering comprehensive financial planning and tailored investment solutions for clients nationwide. More at IsthmusPartnersLLC.com.
Nice to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today about those aches and pains that you might have developed maybe at the Ironman, a few people, or maybe through other sorts of activities. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. One of our guests, the other Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Welcome back, guys.
Good to be here. Yeah,
thank you. Good to be here, too. I got sore watching people
exactly.
Yesterday.
I think there were a lot of people who developed a little elbow tendonitis from raising their beer as they watched the Ironman go by. But
and it's what? 2.5 miles swim. Is it about 2.5 miles, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
2.4. And 100,
yeah, 100-mile bike.
110-mile bike ride, yeah. And then a 26-mile run.
It just makes me fatigued thinking about it.
Well, guess what? Kathy and Nina is on. Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Well, we're fine, but how are you?
I understand you participated.
I'm okay. I did do the Ironman yesterday, and I've done it six other times before. But
wow.
I had a question on recovery and what you guys recommended. I mean, I'm obviously really sore today, but nothing more than normal. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading in the paper this morning about these pros that they just did an Ironman last week, and now they're doing another one this week.
Oh,
and I don't even want to think about swimming or biking or running right
now. Oh, no.
It's probably better that way not to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they're pros.
For the normal person, what do you recommend recovery-wise after an event so that we don't injure anything?
Well, your event should be part of a larger training program. You think about your training in cycles. You know, they break it down to, you know, mini cycles, mesocycles, macro cycles, into various cycles throughout the year. So you should be thinking about taking a little bit of time off and then thinking about what's next in terms of your next goal. For the week after, I usually recommend light activity. That means some walking, some gentle pool activity, getting out for an easy bike ride, just doing stuff that feels comfortable just to remind your muscles that you want to keep moving. You want to keep moving some of the lactic acid or any buildup out of it. You want to do some gentle stretching to make sure your muscles can return to their normal resting length. But basically, you're in a recovery mode. You're just moving. You're staying active. You're keeping your joints loose. You're keeping your muscles long, but you're not taxing them.
Okay, thank you. Do you, as from a scientific standpoint, is there normally after an event like this a certain amount of time that you should recover, or is it just based on how you feel and listening to your body? What do you recommend?
I'd say the latter, because it's such an individual experience. Now, mm-hmm. You gave the example of the professionals. Okay, that's their job, and they're trained to do this time after time after time. That's why they're professionals. But everyone else falls somewhere in between, from the person who does this one time, they want to get it done, and that's it. They're not ever going to do it again, to the person that likes to do, you know, a couple of them a year and then a couple other races in between. Kind of depends upon your own individual situation, your age, how well you're trained, and so on. So I would say listening to your body is probably the best advice.
Yeah. And, okay. You did fine?
I did fine. Yep, I finished, which is always the goal, and not to get into the medical tent. So
exactly.
That was good.
That's a good definition of doing fine.
Exactly.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. And Kathy's right. The guy who won the men's division actually had run an Ironman last week.
Wow.
And
yeah.
he broke the record, the time record this week.
Right.
So
mm-hmm. Right. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think it's great to look at those people and admire them. But I think the average person shouldn't think that because they can do it, that, you know, Bill or I could do it.
Right. Well, like you said, a professional, this is their vocation, this is their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And they gear the rest of their life around this competition and training, which is not the case for most people mm-hmm. who are participating.
It's well, an avocation.
You start at 7 in the morning, you have till midnight. I think I might make the swim. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's go to Hank in Madison. Hank, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question on regaining range of motion in my accident-damaged left knee and in my two accident-damaged fingers on the left hand.
Okay.
And a question on manipulation under anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1971, I've been an avid bicyclist. While I was bicycling 15 weeks ago, that was late May, I was hit by a careless driver on my left side. So my left knee had really bad damage, and the two fingers were damaged, too, and I also got a hematoma. I was taken in an ambulance to the VA hospital here in Madison, and x-rays were done. Nothing was broken. 20 days after the accident, an MRI was done. The MRI showed marked bone bruising on the medial femoral condyle, on the lateral tibial plateau, probable tears in the posterior horns of the medial meniscus and lateral meniscus, a grade 3 tear in the MCL and a grade 1 tear in the LCL, and partial tears in the ACL and PCL.
Oh.
Yeah.
You got it all going on, don't you?
Right.
I don't think there's a structure that you've missed.
I know.
Maybe the anterior horn of your meniscus, but yeah.
Well, 2 days after the accident, my doctor put me in a leg immobilizer, and I had that on for 7 weeks straight. When I had it off, I just kept my leg straight and stiff, but, it was on most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a little worried that I don't have much range of motion right now. I can only bend my left leg to about 90 degrees. I started physical therapy a month ago, and I'm doing various exercises. The one that causes me a great deal of pain is the heel slide,
mm-hmm.
Where I'm sitting on the
yep.
floor.
Yep.
Yeah, and, I can only go so far. Then I'm in lots of pain, but I was told to go into the pain a bit. But is this just going to take a long, long time for me to get, almost what I had, before the accident, range of motion in that left leg?
Yeah, it's going to take a long time. What are they saying about the damage to the ligaments, the ACL, the PCL, and the meniscus?
Well, I think I saw someone outside of the VA a few weeks ago, and it seems maybe things are much better in those. Maybe something couldn't be said about the meniscus. I don't know.
Okay.
About the ligaments, it seems they've healed. I still have a lot of pain, though, on the medial side of the left knee.
Yeah.
It's higher up. It's sort of near the kneecap, but
yeah.
It's by the MCL area, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be the MCL. If you had a third-degree MCL, that's the reason they immobilized you, is they wanted that to heal.
Uh-huh.
Because if you had a partial ACL, a good, strong MCL can protect it. The ACL and the MCL work together to kind of stabilize your knee. When the therapist takes your knee and bends it, does it still hurt as much as when you do the heel slide?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tell them to stop. I'm in a lot of pain if they...
Okay. Okay.
90 degrees or a little over, there's really a lot of pain.
Okay. Have they tried doing some traction with that?
No.
Okay. That would be another thing to try, is a little traction. Sometimes when you have those meniscus tears and you're sliding and you're bending your knee and you're crunching on that, a little bit of traction can help that. But it sounds like it's going to take some time. You're in therapy now. You need to keep working with your therapist. You're going to have to move into the pain some, but I'd recommend moving in and out of the pain. Move into the pain, move back out. Move into the pain, move back out. Not necessarily holding the knee there if it's causing you a lot of pain.
Hank, are they doing any deep massage around that area?
No.
That would be something else. I'm sure with there's some deep scarring.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do some deep massage, deep soft tissue work around the area in addition to the stretching that's being done, that may give you some more degrees of bend in your knee in particular. So, it may have been their opinion it's too early yet, but after the length time of immobilized, if the ligaments have recovered, then you should tolerate some deep massage that could help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. It's a tough one.
It is. It's a tough one. It's going to take some time. He should get there, but it's immobilized for 7 weeks. The research shows that when you immobilize a knee, it takes at least twice as long the immobilization time to remobilize the joint. Yeah. And even at that point, for example, with an MCL, a year later, it'll be maybe half the strength of the of a healthy MCL. So these take enormously long time to rehabilitate, especially the MCL.
And the bone bruising on top of
that. And the bone bruise, yeah. So he's got a tall order. The fact that he's, you know, up to 90 degrees, however many, he's been a month in PT, I'd say is pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. And he sounds like he is dedicated and really wants to get
back. Motivated.
That makes motivation.
Makes a big difference. So he just needs to continue to work with and communicate with his PT. Yeah.
Thanks again, Hank. Stephanie in New Berlin will turn to you next. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a brief question. My daughter, this summer, hurt her lower back. She's 11. And her biggest complaint right now is that when she bends over, she used to be able to touch the floor with her hands.
Yeah.
From her legs straight.
Yeah.
Now when she bends over, she can't get... She's about 6 inches from the floor.
Okay.
And she can't bend any further.
Okay.
So I don't know where to start with. Who would I start with? My husband sees a chiropractor, but, you know, she's 11, so I'm a little reluctant to...
Right.
You know, send her to a chiropractor, but if... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Stephanie, do you know how she got hurt?
Yes, she was on a tube being pulled by a boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
And she was thrown in the air, and she was with another person, and they kind of collided, and she fell into the tube, and her back bent. Her head was in the tube, but her body was above it.
No.
So it kind of bent the wrong way, I guess it would be how I describe it.
Yeah, so it sounds like her back bent backwards or arched.
Yes.
She landed on her stomach, kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so she's stiff when she bends forward. How much pain is she in?
She doesn't complain about pain.
Okay.
No, that's not one of the complaints. It's just that she said, I just can't go any further than this.
Okay, so she's lost the flexibility.
Right.
Well, considering how long it's been, she should have recovered from a pulled muscle or a strain by now. I'd recommend seeing a physician at this point in time.
Okay.
They may want to do some imaging, whether it's plain films or more advanced imaging. You know, the good thing is that she's not in pain, so you know nothing super serious, but she should be able to touch the floor at this age if she could do it before.
Right.
So I would start with a physician who could, if advanced imaging is needed, then they can provide that and set that up for her.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you go like to her general physician, and then they might recommend somebody else or the imaging or...
Well, possibly an orthopedist.
An orthopedist, okay.
Right, which maybe you have to set up through the general practitioner, but maybe a call to the GP's office as a starting point.
For a recommendation. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Or if they have an adolescent sports medicine physician.
Yeah.
I mean, here at UW, we have physicians who are combination sports medicine pediatricians, and they'd be my first choice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks,
Stephanie, and good luck to you and your daughter. Dennis and Racine, it's your turn next. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, hello. Yes, I have had a problem that's lasted about 4 months in the right Achilles tendon caused by overstretching due to a physical therapist in the spring for some other problem. And
no.
I've seen several different doctors. I guess it was originally diagnosed as Achilles tendonitis, but I've had a lot of physical therapy, including iontophoresis and ultrasound and some exercising. And wore a cam walker for about 1.5 months. And I'm no longer wearing the cam walker, but it's still hurting on weight bearing and motion of that ankle.
Okay.
And recently a test was done that claimed that MRI didn't show any sign of Achilles tendonitis anymore in that ankle, but there's still severe pain on walking. So I started physical therapy recently at Frater, but they said it's going to take a long time to get better. I'm not certain what to do about this. Or if any could still be Achilles tendonitis. I don't think it is after this much time, but I'm not sure what to do.
All right.
So this started 4 months ago when you had an overstretching injury?
Yes, I was ordered by a physical therapist at a chronic pain facility in Milwaukee area. I did not have tendonitis at that time. It was for other problems. It was for tight calf muscle, et cetera. But he ordered calf stretching on some stairs, which... pushed it a little bit too far, and it started to hurt. Hmm. I've had problems ever since then.
Hmm. And where in your Achilles is the pain?
It's right above where the Achilles joins the calcaneus.
Okay. All right. And the MRI showed no evidence of tendonitis or tendinosis or anything. It was a perfectly pristine tendon?
The only note I have is that there's no sign of Achilles tendonitis, not the other things you mentioned.
Oh. Okay. Hmm. So, well, it could be there's a burst in the area. You could have a bursitis in the area. Is it really tender to touch right in that specific area if you poke around there, or do you just feel the pain in that area but you can't find a tender spot?
It's tender to the touch, and or anything brushing against it, increased sensitivity there in the back of the tendon.
Okay.
At the same point where it hurts on weight bearing.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a fairly difficult problem to sort out, especially in light of the original diagnosis of calf pain and chronic pain, because one of the issues with chronic pain in an area is because of what's called central sensitization at your spinal cord, the area of increased pain tends to increase and spread and widen and spread to adjacent areas. So it gets really fuzzy whether the pain is coming from that specific site or whether it's because of something that's going on in your spinal cord level. So I'd have to say that I would continue to work with the physical therapist to help sort out the source of the pain. And I would be reluctant to send you in any specific direction in terms of exercise, just because it is a fairly complex picture that we're dealing with here. It's not a clear-cut tendonitis or tendinosis. If the MRI showed that, then I'd probably send you in the direction of a fairly vigorous eccentric exercise program. But I think in light of the other information you provided, it's probably not the way to go. So I would say to continue working with your physical therapist, who has a better handle on the whole picture.
Yeah,
I would agree with that, with Lori's assessment. The fact that the MRI came back negative, that can make you feel good that there's no local tissue damage. Now, the issue is you're still hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Lori's right. Looking elsewhere besides that local area to try to get the door open where you start getting some relief would be critical. So that would include examining and addressing any issues up in the spine, maybe even up in your neck. But the MRI helps steer us away from that local spot where you happen to feel the most pain at this point in time.
Oh, so good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling, Dennis. Appreciate your call. Talking physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Physical therapy issues on our mind today with Lori Tyne Brody from the UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill Boisenault, physical therapist in the UW Medical School, our two guests today. They come by once a month to talk with us, as a matter of fact, and we have one open line, so you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. You could also email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Christina now in Glenwood City. Christina, hi.
Hi there. My sister is a cook in a restaurant for the past 25 years, and she's on her feet all day. She has plantar fasciitis.
Okay.
A chiropractor fitted her with inserts about 3 months ago, and she's had absolutely no relief, and she's extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like fairly classic plantar fasciitis. So the inserts didn't help at all. What kind of shoes is she in? Has someone addressed the issue of shoes with good support?
I believe her shoes do have good support. Is there a certain brand that you recommend that I could suggest to her?
I don't actually recommend a specific brand, but finding a shoe that works well for her foot. So if your shoe's in bad shape, the inserts won't help you. It needs to be not just an expensive shoe, but a shoe that's in good shape. They actually wear out faster than people think, because you can look at them on the outside and they say, oh, it looks pretty good yet. But the material breaks down fairly rapidly. So if she's mostly standing, she's going to want a shoe that has good cushion, that has a good stiff heel counter, like the back of the shoe is relatively stiff, so it holds her heel stable. If her heel is stable, then the insert can do its job a little bit better. So good cushion and good support. Second, if she's staying in a fairly confined space, getting a cushioned mat to stand on or move around on rather than on those hard tile or cement surfaces that cooks often find, if they could just invest in something that gives her a little bit more cushion. Thirdly, she should try a night splint at night because the way we sleep, that plantar fascia is in a shortened position, and a night splint will help hold her foot in a better position. And you can find those online. There's all different versions of splints that go behind your calf and ankle, splints that go in front. There's a Strasburg sock, which is a big sock. And basically what they do is they hold your foot and toes up during the night. That helps people a lot. Then there's physical therapy activities, specific stretching and strengthening exercises that help increase the flexibility of the painful tissue. So sometimes a visit or two to a physical therapist can help give them some exercises that will help, as well as look at her entire body posture and alignment to see if there's something else that might be a contributing factor to that. Is it both feet or just one?
It's 1 foot.
Okay. See, that's interesting because you'd think as a cook, she's standing equally on both feet. So why does she have a problem in 1 foot and not the other? And that's something that a good examination by a physical therapist can help sort out and see if there's a leg length difference, if there's the way she moves that puts more weight on one leg than another. They can work on retraining that and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about hot and cold packs? Would either of those be a benefit?
Yeah, often people like to put cold on, especially at the end of the day. And Bill likes to describe a little bottle technique. You want to talk about that, Bill?
Sure. She takes a soda bottle and fills it with water and puts it in the freezer. Then she takes it out. That bottle's frozen. It's cold. And you can put that on the floor. And then she can roll her foot back and forth on the bottle. So it's a combination. You get the cold impact and also a little bit of massage in that area.
Oh, sure.
And end of her day, right before she goes to bed, would be good times to do that. And better than heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Okay.
Those are some things to try.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
Thanks for calling. And on to Scott in Milwaukee next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
The question actually revolves around, I'm an avid cyclist for many years now, and a relatively young guy, I'd like to think at 33, who's gotten into running thanks to a couple of friends. I'd done quite a bit of running back in college and kind of gave up on it. Got back into it in the last year and started trying to do some competitive things, including 10Ks and half marathons. And I'm noticing that I'm having trouble past the 8-9 mile mark with a left knee and getting increasing soreness in the hips. Specifically, it feels like it's in the joints. And that's got me a little worried at my age, and I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that. Obviously, I've got some plans to get the knee assessed. What seems to be going on with that isn't soreness as much as just it literally feels like the joint itself won't support anything, and the running becomes more difficult after that because it feels like I'm overcompensating in the quad and the calf to go ahead and hold everything in place and keep falling.
Mm-hmm.
But the hip seems like a more long-term concern. The knee seems to rebound within about 24 to 36 hours, but the hip soreness persists for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that never bothered you on your bike?
No.
Okay. And still doesn't bother you when you bike. You can go out and bike and the knee and the hip are fine.
Correct.
Okay. So there's something about the weight-bearing activity of running or the impact of running. It may be that the issue of your knee feeling unstable, you're compensating at your hip. And that's why, the knee recovers, but the hip stays sore because it's still compensating for your knee. So I think going in and getting a good evaluation is the right first step. There's a strong relationship between the knee and the hip, and hip and knee strength and core strength. So I think having someone do a good biomechanical evaluation of you, particularly when you're running, bring your running shoes in. They may need to look at you running and to find out what the underlying cause is. It could be a leg length difference. It could be a muscle imbalance. It could be any of a number of factors, but you need to get to the underlying cause. Because it's a weight-bearing issue and not a non-weight-bearing issue, there's something about the weight-bearing position that holds the key for you, I think.
Yeah. And Scott, when you go in, I wouldn't downplay the hips. You mentioned your knee right off the bat. And Lori's right. There is a very strong connection, the knee impacting the hip. Sometimes you can get knee pain referred from the hip. So they should be taking a close look at your entire, from your spine down to the floor, and trying to tie things into your symptoms that you have.
Would running stride possibly have anything to do with it? My stride is entirely 4 foot and no heel strike whatsoever.
It sure could. Because when you land on your forefoot, your quads are not effective at decelerating your leg and decelerating your body weight as it hits the ground. And so that force is going to be transmitted probably up to your hip, and it's going to take its toll on your knee. Mechanically, your forefoot was not designed to accept impact. Your heel, because your heel bone, think of your heel bone as a big, strong bone. It was designed to absorb impact. The bones in the front of your foot are fairly small. They weren't designed to absorb impact. But again, you come back to the question that we had with the previous caller. Why are you having symptoms on the left and not the right if you're running the same way on both sides? So someone needs to take a look at you, and I would strongly encourage you to avoid the 4 foot initial contact.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Spooner, we turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband has been going through this ongoing thing for months now, since the end of June. It initially started with a swelling of the knee, and then it changed, and he had some extreme back pain. And ER visits and doctor visits and a rheumatologist visit, and finally he had an MRI done a week ago, and they discovered he had a bulging disc. But the knee is preventing him to walk correctly, and the swelling in it, I mean, it's just immense, and they have not diagnosed what that is. Is there any real effect between the back pain and the swelling in the knee, or could they be two separate things happening at the same time?
Most likely two separate things. You can have knee pain coming from the back, and if the back pain is severe enough and it alters how you walk and move, you can cause some irritation at the knee, but it would not be a direct connection. Have they done any tests at the knee? You mentioned MRI for the back. Have they done any kind of testing for the knee?
They took out the synovial fluid and tested it, because their first diagnosis was Lyme's. He was on antibiotics for 2 months.
Okay.
And they said all the knee fluid was normal.
Okay.
And then the swelling went down after that for a couple of weeks, and now it's back. It's just huge.
So they haven't done an MRI of the knee or any imaging of the knee, X-rays?
No, nothing.
Okay. Well, that kind of swelling is not directly related to your spine, unless there's something systemic going on and you've seen a rheumatologist. It sounds like he needs a really good knee exam, including some discussion about imaging, to try to figure out why that swelling is occurring.
Yeah.
What type of doctor would you suggest?
An orthopedic.
Yeah.
Like an orthopedic doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, did he have any kind of injury to that knee?
No, nothing. Nothing
yeah.
to the knee. Now, I can understand the back, because he was doing a lot of hard farm work this spring, and 50-year-old man not quite used to that kind of work. I can understand that he'd develop a back problem, but the knee just came. And he had also had some swelling in his fingers before that.
Okay. Yeah. And where did the diagnosis of Lyme come from? Was he recently bit by a tick?
No, but he had been treated for Lyme's 2 years ago,
okay.
or 3 years ago.
Okay.
And they just, because it's so prevalent in the area, they just, actually the Lyme test came back negative.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of issues with the Lyme test and chronic Lyme disease. So the knee swelling certainly could be chronic Lyme disease.
Right.
So hopefully the...
Really?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was a point that I had made to him. I said, well, he had quit taking the antibiotics probably 2 weeks ago, and the swelling had gone down, and now it's back.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if there might be a direct link to the antibiotic and the knee swelling.
I would say yes.
Right.
I would say yes.
This is just the most frustrating thing.
Oh, I can hear that.
Doctors, I mean,
yeah.
it's just, told him, I said, I don't know what to tell you anymore. I don't know where to go anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I think if an orthopedist would be the right place to start. And then if you any information you can get from the rheumatology visits and bring that in with you or have them sent to the orthopedist office would help speed up the communication and the collaboration.
In the absence of an injury, I think it's prudent to see the orthopedic to rule out any mechanical cause of the swelling in the knee, that there's no meniscus tear or anything else that's causing that swelling. Once you've ruled that out as a cause, then you go back to the rheumatology piece, which is the Lymes.
Yeah.
Right.
So whoever's following is Lymes, I would say that pattern of swelling and symptoms and antibiotic stuff is pretty classic for chronic Lyme disease.
Okay.
The rheumatologist.
And with because he argues with me because I tell him he should lay flat for the back. Is there any truth to that, or am I just blowing smoke? Well, he sits a lot. He sits in an angle, and I said you're just putting more pressure on that vertebra.
Prolonged slump sitting will increase the pressure in and around that disc. Sitting more upright with a little cushion or pillow behind your back helps maintain a normal lordotic curve that can decrease the intradiscal pressure a bit. After you've been sitting for a while or working, if you're still working on the farm, coming home and lying down for a while can be helpful. Lying on your side can be a good position with a pillow underneath your knees. If you're lying flat on your back, a pillow underneath your knees can be a good position. Sitting increases the pressure in and around those discs.
Yeah.
Okay, and how about sleeping position?
Sleeping, again, the good positions are on either side with a pillow between your knees. Lying on the back is okay with a pillow underneath your knees. Sleeping on the stomach works really well for some people, but sometimes they'll wake up really stiff and sore.
Right.
But back or either side.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you a lot for calling, Mary. And we'll turn to Chuck in Eau Claire next. Hi, Chuck.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I was playing softball about a month ago, slid into a base and kind of twisted my knee up a little bit. Running, biking, everything's fine that way. But when I bend down to, say, air up a tire or something like that, there's pretty good pain there. And like when I sit in my vehicle for a while, if the knee is bent, it hurts when I get out. It's stiff. If I get out and walk on it for a while, it's fine. Or, even run on it, it's fine. But I'm just wondering what that could be.
Where does it hurt when you sit for a long period of time or when you squat down?
I don't know. Kind of in the front, right underneath the kneecap, I suppose.
Okay. All right. And when you slid into the base, do you remember kind of vaguely how your knee twisted or which way it twisted?
I want to say the leg was underneath me. I think it twisted, so the toe was,
Okay, so your leg was underneath you.
Correct.
It wasn't the leg that was going to the base.
It wasn't the leg that was straight in front of you.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, you crunched your kneecap would be my best guess. Is when you have your foot behind you, you really compress your kneecap down on the bone below it.
Okay.
And if you had any kind of twisting to it or all, you think of it as kind of like scuffing up your joint surfaces, because the symptoms you described are fairly classic for patellofemoral pain or kneecap pain, but that isn't the kind of pain I would associate with sliding into a base with your legs straight, but it is sliding with your knee bent. So I'm guessing that's probably what you did. So you got your kneecap stirred up. So I would do some icing around your kneecap. I'd do some strengthening of my quadriceps by doing things like a leg raise where you lay on your back and tighten that muscle and lift your leg up. Maybe doing some wall slides from straight up down to about 45 degrees and back up to build up some strength, and stretching your quads and hamstrings and your hip muscles.
Okay.
And over time, it should recover.
All right.
If it's not turning the corner after trying that for 3 or 4 weeks, then you should go in and see a PT and get a more specific exercise program, or look for any mechanical factors in you, such as your foot, hip, knee, strength, posture, that might be perpetuating the symptoms once they get stirred up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thank you.
Diane in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes. If you hear a phone ringing in the background, means I'm just at work and I'm going to let it ring.
Okay.
So I'm trying to walk away so it isn't so loud. I've been dealing with a neck issue probably most of the summer. I've seen a neurosurgeon and I had an MRI done to my neck and shoulder area, and they said that I had a slight slip disc, but not much. And then the neurosurgeon even told me that he wouldn't even do surgery on me. So they sent me to physical therapy. I've done everything from exercises to ultrasound, and now at home I have a TENS unit, and I've been doing that, and I'm still having problems. What would be, what type of doctor would I go to next?
Well, can I ask you what kind of work you do?
Office work, and I've done everything I could possibly do at work to get my hands up, get my neck up, my head up, because I can't look down very often. And that doesn't seem to irritate it anymore because I got everything in line now.
Good. Okay. Okay. So
yeah,
your workstation is all
right
set
away.
Up. All right. And was there an injury to your neck?
Not that I know of. No.
Okay. All right. Any numbness tingling into your arms or hands or pain going down into your arms?
I did before physical therapy.
Okay.
And then also my hand fell asleep.
Okay.
And it's on my left side.
Okay. And so the left arm stuff has resolved?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
But it's still, I still can't do half the exercises because of the stiffness and the knotting up of my muscles. Oh, yeah, by the way, too, I've had two cortisone shots and trigger point shots. And it's still is really, really stiff. If I go to the I was going to the physical therapist twice a week,
okay.
And she could not believe how much my neck would knot up and get tight. And so she tried the ultrasound, and it helped, but not like the TENS unit. When she started doing that, it got a lot better.
Okay.
So I got a unit at home now that I do, about every other night.
Okay.
But I can't do the exercises because I can't bend my neck down and I can't stretch it too much.
Right.
And so I thought, well, I've seen the neurosurgeon, and he doesn't feel like there's anything there that he could do. Well, who would I go to?
Right. Well, that's the good news, that there's nothing wrong with the nerves that they can find with what the testing they did. Well, there's a couple of things to consider trying. One is potentially try acupuncture. As a way to try to break up the spasm cycle and to start loosening things up so you better tolerate the exercise program.
Right.
Short term, that has to be the initial goal. That might be a good place to start. The physical therapist that you worked with, if they're not a spine specialist, then it may be worthwhile seeing one who specializes in people who have neck pain and potentially headaches.
Okay.
The fact that you got rid of the stuff in your left hand and arm is really a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get rid of the neck pain until the hand symptoms go away first, typically.
Right.
So possibly exploring and trying to see a specialist in that area would be a good next step.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That'll give me something to go on, at least.
All right.
Good luck, Diane.
Thanks, Diane, for calling. Talking physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a physical therapy issue, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Give us an email. Either 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's do it that way, and we'll be glad to get you on. Dave in Tomahawk's up next. Dave, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about my left knee. I ran a half marathon last fall for the first time.
Yep.
And took 4 or 5 days off afterwards and then went out and ran again just 3 or 4 miles. And I had a bit of discomfort in my knee after I was done, which progressed over the next couple of weeks. And it hurt a lot when I was sitting, had it bent, and I have to straighten it, and it felt a lot better. The pain went away, and I cross-country skied on it all winter, had no problems. I wanted to run again this spring, but there was still just a little bit of discomfort in there, so I saw an orthopedist, and they said that I had a symptomatic plica. and that it was really nothing to be too concerned about. Go ahead and run. Don't hesitate to run. Just take it easy, build up distances slowly, and make sure to cross-train doing other activities. I'm just wondering if there's anything else I can do for this. It does bother me a little bit when I run. There's not a lot of pain there. It's just a little bit of a discomfort. It's kind of just there. You know, feels better when I stop. I'm just wondering what kind of recommendations you have for is this always going to be there? Can I make it completely go away? What do you know about it, I guess?
Well, a plica is an adult remnant of when your knee, before you were born, it was in compartments, and a plica is sort of a remnant of that. And for most people, they're not symptomatic until you get them stirred up. More classically, they get stirred up when you fall on them and bang them.
Ouch.
Yeah, but they can go away. There are a couple things. One is that your plica is fairly closely related to your kneecap and your kneecap position. So sometimes interventions addressed at your kneecap can help relieve plica symptoms. So I'd probably recommend seeing a PT, particularly one who specializes in sports or lower extremity problems, to deal with this. But there are some kneecap mobilization and stretching techniques you can do.
Okay.
Where you actually move your kneecap and hold it to stretch some of that connective tissue.
Okay.
They can take a look at it and look at that plica and see if it would be reasonable to do some deep tissue massage to loosen up that plica. It may be that there's some scar around the plica that's attaching it to some of the connective tissue that attaches to your kneecap and blah, 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 blah. And some specific mobilization and stretching techniques that you can do at home can address those.
Okay.
So that's what I do. They're not things, sure, I can really describe over the radio, but if you get in with a good PT who specializes in this area, they should be able to teach you some of those things. Most importantly, evaluate if the plica is the primary cause or if it's a secondary problem and the relationship between that and your kneecap and maybe your foot posture.
Okay. And in the meantime, activity should not really make it any worse as long as I don't overdo it, I guess. Huh?
Right. And when you're done, you know, if you can put your finger on that area that hurts, I'd get a little paper cup, fill it with water, and stick it in your freezer. And when you're done with your run, do an ice massage right over that area.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And Bruce and Madison, your turn now. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I started doing some yoga this spring for the first time, and I'm doing the very hot yoga where you're in an extremely warm room and you do a sequence of, you know, the same postures every time. And, you know, I'm starting to feel more flexible and it's going really well. And then about the 4th of July, I decided for the first time this summer to take a bike ride. I went out for a couple hours. And that felt fine, but I noticed that the next time that I was doing yoga, a couple of the stretching exercises, my hip or the back of my thigh and on my left leg, you know, really started to hurt if I needed to stretch for the postures where I needed to stretch the leg quite a bit, and I couldn't really straighten the leg out fully in some of the postures and then bend over it the way I could on my right side. And that has continued for a couple of months now. It still really hasn't gotten any better. I don't feel it at all normally, you know, during the regular exercise or regular activities during the day. It's only, you know, during the class, only during a couple of those exercises. And I'm just wondering, you know, what happened to it, or and what I can do to help it get better.
So, Bruce, just to clarify, the poses that you get in yoga that tend to give you trouble, your leg is out straight and you're bending at the waist, or you're bending your back at the same time?
Except I really can't straighten it out. You know, you're trying to hold, you're holding, you know, your foot from underneath with your hands, and then you're trying to straighten your leg and then bend over it, but I can't straighten it out because it just hurts too much.
Okay, and you could do that before.
I could get it a lot closer to being straight than I can now, and I'm a lot closer to being straight on my right leg than I am on my left.
Okay. Well, a couple things. I mean, obviously, the hamstrings are back in that area along with the sciatic nerve. You know, it could be that the biking may have irritated the sciatic nerve a little bit. There's a piriformis muscle up in that buttock area that's very closely related to the sciatic nerve and even the hamstring attachment up in that buttock region. And if it's hamstring, gentle stretching over time should resolve it and take care of it for you. If it's a sciatic nerve that's irritated a bit, it doesn't like to be stretched very much. And especially when you combine stretching the leg the way you describe it along with your trunk at the same time, puts a lot of tension on the sciatic nerve. So That could be part of the issue. My recommendation would be, since it's been a couple of months, is to see a physical therapist and have them examine you and have them look at your spine, and they could help sort out for you, is it simply a local muscle problem, whether it's hamstring and piriformis, or is a little element of the sciatic nerve to it as well? Because if it's that, you want to address it very very differently, and you would probably need to put some of those poses on hold for a while to allow it to settle down.
Well, will it eventually, if I don't do anything that would irritate it, will it eventually resolve itself?
Well, it might. And so I guess what I would do is I would back off on the poses you described to me that are more difficult for you. I would put those on hold for a few weeks. I mean, if I was seeing you as a therapist, I'd probably ask you to do that for a couple of weeks anyways. What can happen over time is that you actually get a little stiffer in the beginning, but then you start making flexibility gains. So backing off for a few weeks and then slowly and gently getting back into those poses would be a test for you. And then if that doesn't work, then consider going and see a therapist.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we'll go to Tom and Stoddard next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I wanted to give some references for the lady who has a husband with Lyme disease. I have purchased a book called Cure Unknown by Pamela Weintraub, Weintraub. This book review was on one of the Wisconsin Public Radio programs. I don't remember which one, but I have not read that book yet.
I've read it. It's an excellent book. Yeah, it was on, I think, Joy Cardine had Pamela on, and it was an excellent show, and it was an excellent book.
Another one is Healing Lyme by Dr. Stephen Herod Buhner, and he covers a lot of the homeopathic herbs that have been used in China and India for 1,500 to 2,000 years. And I've used the herbs in there and have found great results. I went to Dr. Berquist at the Viroqua Hospital, and that's their Bible. And I was not getting any results from the traditional hospital. I asked years ago for a test for Lyme's, and they wouldn't even give it to me because they say it's too iffy that in the results. So I would like to recommend that hospital in Viroqua, Dr. Berquist.
All right.
Thank you.
That's
really great information, and it's a lot of that controversy is outlined in that book by Pamela Weintraub.
I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Grace in Manitowoc, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Grace.
Thank you very much. I am in a quandary. I don't know which way to go, whether I should see a physical therapist, a regular doctor of family medicine, a rheumatologist, or a dentist. That about covers the field. And once you point out who I might go to first, how do you identify a professional? I checked the dentist. They used to have a directory, not anymore. How do you go about selecting? I haven't been using needed medical care or whatever care much, and I'm at a loss, a babe in the woods. So first of all, how do you identify the among these professionals? Where do you go to pick one out?
Well, most professional organizations do have some sort of clearinghouse. The American Physical Therapy Association has a directory. They have a directory of clinical specialists. So if you feel like you need specialized care, you can see someone who's a certified specialist in orthopedics or sports or neurology or geriatrics or cardiorespiratory or whatever kind of area you need. So sometimes you can find those on the web. Another way is to check with your insurance plan and see who the approved providers are. And you can make an appointment with one of them and sort of do an interview, if you will, and see if their style and philosophy of patient care matches your needs. You can talk with friends. I always find it useful talking with other healthcare professionals who sort of have the inside story on other people. So just sort of networking.
Yeah, kind of asking who would you go to,
right,
if you had if you had a problem like this.
Mm-hmm. I have patients frequently ask me that. So if you have a relationship with one health professional, you can kind of start that way.
Mm-hmm.
So very good. I will start with physical therapist. Do you deal with what might be a hip problem in the hollow of the, you know, your, not your butt, the side of your butt where the, you've, that's where it hurts some of the time.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
And that's probably the place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be a good place to start. And unless you have other signs of disease or pathology, you know, that you can describe, you know, hot flashes, you know, generalized achiness, fatigue, or whatever. If you, what you're having is a localized, what appears to be a musculoskeletal problem, PT is a good place to start.
And now, you mentioned specialties, and we had gotten an email from Michael who says, I'm a very lucky person. I've had MS for 25 years, and I see the only MS-certified physician, a physical therapist in Wisconsin, who happens to be in the La Crosse area. And the question was, are there disease-related specific certifications for physical therapists these days? He was just curious about that.
Well, they're not disease-specific, but they're practice area-specific. So like someone called earlier said they'd seen a neurologist or a rheumatologist. Those people are often board-certified in rheumatology or board-certified in neurology, orthopedics, whatever. In physical therapy, you can become board-certified in orthopedics, sports, neurology. I expect the person he's seeing is a board-certified in neurology, and there is also a There are more board-certified neurology specialists. They're board-certified by the American Physical Therapy Association. There's no specific disease specific certification in physical therapy.
Right.
And that's not the approach that physical therapy takes. It takes a broader approach by practice domain. So someone in neurology would work with patients who have MS or Parkinson's or other kinds of neurologic problems.
Yeah, there are certifications you can earn through private groups, but it's not the American Physical Therapy Association that's recognizing those certifications. So I know some therapists that are certified related to scoliosis, for example.
Gotcha.
That's not coming from APTA.
Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, to talk physical therapy issues with you. Send us an email if you have a question at talk@wpr.org or phone us at 800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or send us an email. And Kristen in Whitehall is up with a question about her knee, I believe. Kristen, hi.
Hi. My question is regarding knee pain that developed at the end of my fourth pregnancy, and it seems to be getting worse. My son is now a year and a half old almost, and it only bothers me when I'm either going down steps or inclines, and I feel like I don't have any knee strength if I'm like carrying, you know, a baby or a weight or anything additional other than myself. And I wondered if you had any suggestions on how I might strengthen it.
So this is just one knee?
It's worse than my left knee, but just noticeably, like in the last 2 weeks. I would say it was equal, you know, in the last trimester of my pregnancy and since then.
Okay. And are you currently nursing?
No, I did, however, you know, for the, you know, almost a year.
Okay. All right. Because the connective tissue changes that occur, especially at the end of pregnancy, tend to persist while you're nursing. And it can take several months for it to restore itself. I'd say even up to a year for some of those connective tissue changes to revert back to pre-pregnancy levels. So it's probably...
So did I damage my knees or...
Oh,
I
no,
mean,
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that it's something that you'll recover from. But what I'm saying is it may take a little bit longer. In the meantime, and you haven't had any injury to your knees. You didn't fall and twist them or anything like that in the past.
In the past, I did have one injury, but it was, I have scar tissue under actually my left kneecap from cracking my kneecap, but I was a very young child when that happened.
Okay. And it didn't bother you prior to your pregnancies?
Not really, unless, you know, it was, you know, sports related or something like that. But I really am more sedentary in my lifestyle than I ever have been right now.
Okay.
And kind of attributed the problem to that.
Okay.
But it's getting worse, and that surprised me because I thought, well, once, you know, I'm more active and...
Right. Well, I think there are some specific things you can do to strengthen your knees. The symptoms that you described sound related to a kneecap. So if you have a history of kneecap problems, then some of the connective tissue changes that occur with pregnancy and postpartum can become magnified at that time. So I would say seeing a physical therapist to do a good biomechanical evaluation and giving you specific strengthening exercises based upon the examination findings, as well as helping give you a prescription for activity that's not going to make your knees worse. It's going to be important because I do agree with you that increasing your activity is probably going to be a big part of the solution, but it sounds like you need a little help figuring out how to get there. So I would hate to see you not get active because your knees are bothering you. So it seems...
I am pretty active, like chasing everybody around.
right,
yes. We were fishing this weekend, and as I walked down an embankment, it was very hard for me to not fall.
Right.
It hurt.
Yeah. Right.
The top of my knees hurt so severely.
Right.
I was trying to think of a different way to get down a hill.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, you're exactly right. You'd have to go backwards.
Yeah.
But that kind of activity isn't structured enough to build up your strength, considering the hole you're probably climbing out of. So I would encourage you to see a physical therapist for even for a couple of visits to do an examination, look at your quadricep strength, make sure that there's no underlying problem. For example, an underlying issue of hypermobility. If you have genetically kind of loose joints, that'd be magnified in the postpartum period. And so that would take a specific kind of exercise program with certain precautions that would be different from a straightforward kneecap kind of problem. So I'd like you to have a good examination to make sure that the exercise prescription fits you.
Okay, I will. Thank
good
you
luck.
So much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I have an email from Bonnie in Waukesha who writes about knee replacement surgery. She had a surgery 3 years ago and required a manipulation under anesthesia 6 weeks post-op. Ouch, she says.
Yeah.
Had fibromyalgia for about 30 years. Not sure if this was a factor in the pain. I needed a TENS unit for several months after surgery and still have a sense of a wide, long, tight band under the knee on good and bad weather days. Question, I'm having the other knee replaced next month, just like a sense of the odds of needing a manipulation after this surgery as well. Don't want to feel so blindsided as I did before. I'm concerned, not out of control anxious about the possibility, just don't want to feel as down after the surgery as I did 3 years ago. And the surgeon, of course, doesn't want to really tell me much more. I want to be ready for it if necessary so the rehab won't seem to be so hard. My PT staff who worked with me for 4 months were wonderful. I'm in better shape this time around, good flexibility, going to Aquasize for seniors and feel stronger than I have in over 20 years. Hope you can fit me in for an answer today.
Well, okay. The fact she's in a lot better shape going into this one really bodes well for her. All the things that she's been doing to help her get to this point will help her postoperatively. In terms of the post-op manipulation, restoring range of motion after the surgery is really important. And there are times that they need to do the manipulation to make sure that the person has a functional amount of knee flexion in particular.
So what do? They put you under and then they...
Do you really want to know?
Well...
It's not something you could do without anesthesia, but they basically bend the joint and they try to tear the adhesions.
Oh,
so that's why it hurts so bad afterwards.
Right.
But you know, you get yourself between a rock and a hard place because a lot of times people have this stiffness because they have so much scar tissue. Well, you go in and you literally tear that apart and there's so much swelling and pain and so on afterwards that they end up back where they started.
Oh,
so yeah. That's why the period after that is really important to make sure they have sufficient pain control so that they don't lose the benefits of the manipulation.
Right. So the immediate post-op program will be really important to mm-hmm. help restore her range of motion as quickly as possible. I'm sure the surgeon has targets and the timelines of how much bend should be in that knee. But again, it sounds like she's doing everything she can do to better prepare herself for this procedure.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a pay me now or pay me later. If she can get in and have sufficient pain control after the original procedure so that right. she can get her range of motion, then she doesn't get stuck in that position where she has to have a manipulation.
Yeah.
And the outcome after that, it just isn't great. So if you can get it right the first time, and a lot of that means working with your physician for sufficient pain control so you can get the PT done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to Judy and Racine next. Judy, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks. I was wondering, if someone had Osgood Schlatter as a young person, are there apt to be any residual effects as they get older?
Let me say what Osgood Schlatter's is first, and that is below your knee, there's a bone where your quadriceps muscles attach. It's that bump kind of below your kneecap at the top of your shin. That's where the attachment of all your big quadriceps muscles is. In adolescence, as they grow, sometimes there's enough traction on that spot that bump gets bigger and bigger where that muscle attaches. It's usually not a problem for kids. It's painful. When it's painful, they should rest and take it easy and do some stretching exercises and some icing. But it typically doesn't have any long-term effects. In terms of adults, it's really only annoying if you have a big bump there. Sometimes it hurts to kneel. So if you're in a profession where you're kneeling a lot, say you're a priest. No, I'm sorry. I was raised right. Catholic. I just had to get that one.
Or a gardener.
Yes. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
an occupation where you kneel a lot, it tends to be a problem. And then there are special knee pads you can get, or you could use a donut pad with a cutout. But typically, it's not a problem for adults.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. On to Sandra in Deerfield. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In early June, I was diagnosed with, I think I'm saying this correctly, occipital neuralgia.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And
sorry.
2 weeks later, I ended up getting shingles on my head and the side of my face. But I still have pain in the back of my neck and my head. It's, not the tingly pain like I had with shingles, and I can now brush my hair without having a lot of pain in my head. So I'm going to go with the occipital neuralgia. But I'm not getting much information from my doctor as to what I should do for this, except a prescription, which I don't like taking. So I guess I'll leave that to you. I also am a cyclist, so that's probably where that neck pain comes from. This summer was kind of a wash because of the pain in the shingles, but I'm getting back into it, some light jogging. And
you do with the biking, is it sort of a racing type bike? Or?
It is. It's a road bike. Last year I did my very first 150 and some other rides. So, I ride quite a bit. I do have a friend who is a cycling coach, and he's checked everything out on my bike, and it's a good fit. Okay. So, I'm hesitant to move anything around. I'm not quite sure what to think of this.
Sandra, the pain that you're left with, is it similar to the pain you had in the very beginning, before the shingles came on?
No, this is different. I actually went to the doctors first off because all the pain I had was on the left side of my head, and I explained it to her. It felt like a jabbing pain, like somebody hitting me in the head with a pickaxe. It was so just painful in certain spots,
okay.
And then it would go away. And a couple times it felt like it was going to take me out in the store, and I thought, oh, I need to go to a doctor here. What's
right.
going on? And that's what she diagnosed me with, because it was all on one side of my head. Now the pain is just a little bit in my neck and the back side of my head.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the things to consider is it could be what's called a cervicogenic headache, which can be headache in that area either coming from some of the joints in your neck and or some of the muscles in your neck. It's really good. Obviously, it's really good that the hypersensitivity and the burning you had with shingles has pretty much resolved, it sounds like. But, you know, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, I would recommend seeing a physical therapist who specializes in spine and who can look at you from both an exercise standpoint, education standpoint, but also manual therapy perspective. As long as you've had it and tied in with your biking, there can be some local stretching to that area where the headache seems to be located, but even down into your mid-back can influence the posture up above to where the head connects to the neck. And that would be what I'd recommend at this stage, considering how long this has been going on.
Okay, and that does make sense to me because right now, and having you on the air right now is very timely for me because I'm scratching my head thinking, gosh, should I go to a chiropractor, sports medicine, or, you know, what's the next step here?
Right, right. Well, that would be my recommendation because they'll look at you from an exercise standpoint. And the fact you had your bike fitted for you is a really good thing. But obviously, it's not enough or else
right.
you'd be better by now.
Right.
But that would have been part of the patient education program. So you've done that already. But they can look at you from a postural standpoint day to day as well as on your bike and really look at you from an exercise manual therapy perspective. They'll give you some different things to do on your own.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. And Judy in Chippewa Falls, give you a chance now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a post-op 3 months from a trauma knee injury. I fell off a ladder painting.
Mm-hmm.
And more or less smashed my kneecap.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going to physical therapy, and I was non-weight-bearing I was supposed to be 2 months, but I was healing so well that they let me go 20%, I think it was at 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 8 weeks, I got to go full percent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought I would hop off that table and just start walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, my knee is, I've been going to physical therapy once a week, and they've been just great and giving me lots of exercise, and I do them at home every day. And the problem I'm having is with my ankle.
Hmm. Okay.
And it pulls up, you know, and it swells. And my physical therapy tells me this is quite common with the injury that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me some exercise to do, but, like, I can't even be on my ankle for more than, like, a half hour, and it swells up.
Mm-hmm. Does it swell to the point where you can't walk on it or use it?
I do, but it gets uncomfortable, so then I end up elevating and icing it.
Okay, and then does that relieve the swelling and you're able to go back to being on your feet?
Right, but then I'm on it for about a half hour and it starts up again.
Okay.
I mean, it's just continual.
Okay. And are you trying any kind of wrap or compression stocking in your foot and ankle?
He told me, and this was just so I was there last Thursday, and he said try to put the TED socks on, he said, at night for like from 5 to 9.
Okay. And has that helped at all?
I think so,
okay.
You know, but not as much as I want.
Well, what about wearing something like that during the day when you're up on it? It seems like that's the time with the problem.
I didn't know if I should or not.
Yep. I'd try that.
Okay.
I'd try that, and then you might also think about doing some of your rehab in a pool, if that's at all available to you, because the hydrostatic pressure of the water will help with your vascular return and help with moving fluid through the lower extremity while you're exercising.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if that's at all possible as part of your rehab program, that would probably be helpful too.
Okay.
But yeah, it'll take some time, but hopefully over time the swelling will be less and less. But do try the TED during the day and keep your PT informed about it, keep your physician informed about it so that they know what's going on.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Shar in Appleton, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, I'm hoping you can help me out. I've been going through a few things. I had a knee problem about 6 months ago, which was just improving when I ended up having surgery on a different part of my body. And the positioning during the surgery caused sciatica, which for the last 4 months comes and goes, as you know it does, and it doesn't always act up. So I just started PT, and during the evaluation, of course, it didn't act up, and we couldn't trigger it. Can you trigger sciatica to to show the physical therapist what's going on, or do you have to be in there at the exact moment that it's causing the problem? Because we weren't able to find anything, and then the evaluation ended up throwing out my back for 4 days.
Oh, boy.
I'd like to be without all of the pain.
Absolutely. In most cases, if somebody truly has sciatica, you can find something in your exam related to the sciatic nerve. You know, the straight leg raise is a standard test that can stress the sciatic nerve. But some people, straight leg raise without lifting your head up along with it or doing a straight leg raise and sitting or standing, the one on your back isn't enough to provoke symptoms. So there's a way to put more and more stretch or stress on the sciatic nerve. And so, like I said, in most cases, you'll find something in your exam. Now, if I go through the exam and I'm not finding something like what you're describing to us here, and based on your history, I'm still pretty convinced it should be sciatic nerve, then I may ask you to come in when it's stirred up a little bit. Even if you wake up with it one morning, I'd ask you to give me a call, and I would get you in somehow, some way, when you do have some of the sciatic symptoms. But if it's sciatic nerve, in most cases, you'll find something in your exam, limited range of motion, certain postures or positions are painful. It would be unusual not to find something if it was a sciatic nerve.
Hmm.
We found nothing, but it usually acts up like after I walk like 3 miles or I'm active all day long.
Okay.
During the end of the day. When I've been on my feet all the while, all of a sudden it'll start, and it's just in the one leg and it's in the one area. And it's also around the top of my thigh. Feels like my leg's being, like, cut off. And it's a burning sensation. So we think it's sciatica, but...
Yeah, you need to park 3 miles away from the PT's office.
Yeah, and why? Yeah. You know, if you can bring it on, like that, I that's what I would probably ask you to do is before you come in, I want you to walk 3 miles. Or I want to see you at the end of the day. And then the idea would be they should be able to find something in their exam that either leads them to the sciatic nerve or somewhere else.
So the end of the day would probably be a good...
Be a better time, it sounds like, yes.
Sounds like it would be much better. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Norm in Wausau, we'll go to you now. Hi, Norm.
Hi. I have two questions for your panelists this morning, two problems quickly. One is a pain in my left hip. It's a pressure pain when I sleep on it, which has been for about 3 weeks getting worse. And also at the same time, I have a pain on my elbow on the extensor surface, extending down towards the wrist from the elbow. And as a side thing, I've had lower extremity weakness for about 3 years that's slowly progressive, very slowly. But I notice it more and more as I'm getting older. Is there anything I can do about those things that seem reasonable? We do have a plush mattress. And, of course, I have sleep apnea, and I use one of those CPAP machines. So my left side was my favorite side to sleep on. But now I have to sleep on my back, which is not as comfortable for me, or my right side.
Right.
Okay. Any suggestions?
The left hip, Norm, it's just been the last 3 weeks. When it wakes you up, is it over the hip bone on your side? Is it in
yes.
the groin?
Hip bone.
It's more on the hip bone itself. Okay. Well, then if you're on a plush mattress, that should help. But still may be that it could be a little too firm for you to tolerate the direct pressure from the mattress itself. One of the things to maybe try is to get some foam that you can put, you know, underneath your mattress pad if you've got one, and see if in fact that makes a difference. When you're on your back, having a pillow or two underneath your knees can help put your hip in more of a neutral or middle ground position. You may have to reinsert them there periodically during the night as you change positions and move. But instead of having your legs out straight, having your hips and knees flex some may help. Now, the elbow to the wrist, does that wake you up as well?
Not as much as that hip. And I noticed that under other circumstances as well, where I lean down, you know, on my left arm. I can notice it too.
Okay.
There are a number of different things that can be going on there. It could be something with your triceps. It could be a nerve in the area. It could be, you know, a version of golfer's elbow or tennis elbow. It could be coming from your neck. So I think a more thorough evaluation by a physical therapist or your physician. And given the history of progressive weakness in your lower extremity, that needs to be seen by a physician. So I'd start there for those problems.
All right. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Lori and Bill, thank you. You'll be back in a month or so.
Yes, we will.
Sure.
Yep, October.
Right. We'll do it all over again. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. And they'll be back in about a month, and we'll do this all over again. Talk with them about our own aches and pains. Tomorrow we'll take a look at your pet's health. And our guest, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.